Last time on Roseville Beach.
And she like walks up to the tree and just looks up at this very comfortably perched animal. Do you have something to say, or?
Their fur turns to skin and clothing as Estelle stands before you.
I would like you to disclose to the rest of the group what's in your pocket.
She flips the knife out and it like twirls around as she stabs it into a tree.
Are you leaving it there for me?
Asmodeus, he is better known as Compulsion. You must lead me to the ley line. That is all I ask. Know that I will find it regardless.
The storm crackles again as the sky darkens, blocking out any of the moonlight. And Halley's Coven steps on shore. Here is the situation. A hurricane is approaching Roseville Beach.
I would like to call the sword.
And you see the stars align in a pattern of a new hero, Atticus. And the sword falls from the sky and lands at your feet.
Even if it's just for a summer, you are also people of Roseville Beach in need of protection. There is almost this pulse wave that kind of travels along the beach and like the sand ripples off to both sides as it goes the length of Roseville Beach.
In this act of love, you are gifted magic by September Brown.
Good evening, sister. I'm very, very sorry, but this is a party you are not invited to.
Not dissimilar to the way September returned to the ley line. Estelle's body begins to disappear, and we see Hurricane Halley growing stronger and stronger.
Mysterious light shine along the ocean bay. Hard to resist the thrills upon the summer haze. Together on the beach we'll turn the night to day. Adventures on the beach, so come along. To play, monsters hide, but they won't stay. Roseville Beach with the gang that they found will turn this town right back around. Lou knows there's no broken thing that she can't fix.
Who else? At your service.
Magic that comes from lost powers, the witch Alix.
Hi, I'm Alix.
Arian's quest for love includes some fishy tricks.
Hi, I'm Arian.
Together these three will surely have you transfixed. Roseville Beach, the ghosts like to play. Monsters hide, but they won't stay.
We return in the moment we left, watching Hurricane Halley quickly approach Roseville Beach, and it passes over the lighthouse, it passes over the ships at sea, and they disappear behind it. They are gone to the storm. The winds whip and bear against the shield that Lou has conjured as lightning strikes and strikes and strikes like someone hammering a nail into a wall, until finally there is a puncture right at its base. Coming from the sea, more and more of Halley's Coven funneling themselves to that crack. Arian, as you hear the entity Compulsion ripple a command, find the ley line. Hallie is pinned against the sea bank, but she has been charged with the ley line. She's been charged with Kao's divine essence. She, for lack of a better term, is a demigod in this moment.
Arian sees all of this, the salt water licking against his face as he witnesses more ships consumed by the storm, more lives on his shoulders. And as he realizes that we are outnumbered and outgunned in every sense of the word, Arian, like, pulls Hallie by her hair back towards his face with the blade still at her throat and says, I have given you plenty of options, sister. You have left me no choice. You wield powers that do not belong to you. And I need a god's hand in this more than anything else. I'm just a man. I want to try and pierce Hallie where the divine magic is specifically. Because the ley line magic was not mine. I held it, but it wasn't mine. But Chaos magic is his. And I want to make a hole so that Kao can maybe siphon the magic back to himself.
This is a very big moment for you, Arian. Goal, injury, scared, trouble.
The 4 can go to trouble. 6 to goal. And the 2 ones can go to injured and scared. The way that Arian stabs her, he holds the sword, as I've mentioned before, poorly. Instead of holding it in a typical grip, he holds it in a reverse grip. So the way that he wounds her as he holds her hair back is he slices through part of her torso, revealing a large gash where he hopes divine energy might flow out of.
Despite having never used a blade, you strike true as the divine essence is now exposed, able to bleed like golden ichor from Hallie's body.
Thank you, Atticus.
But she in turn took a blow on you as she pulls out a jagged piece of iron and strikes it directly in your chest. You are going to take a scare of mortal and an injury of drowning as the iron she has stabbed into you, broke off and embedded in your chest, is the same iron that Oliver's crew used to capture your kind. You do not have access to your siren powers in this moment.
As she breaks off the blade, we don't even hear the painful gasp that would have escaped his lips. As he's already in the water, all we see are bubbles that flutter out of his mouth as he begins to be pulled by the tide downward, unable to swim up as he like reaches out. I think Atticus's blade is fallen to the beach at this point in this one swift movement, and Arian drowns, or is drowning, I should say.
Your vision begins to fade. It goes dark. You can hear the blood rush through your skin, through your temple. You reach out into the darkness, and someone reaches back. They grab you, elbow with their hand, pull you out of the water into a small little boat that is being rocked by this storm, as Oliver has saved you.
Arian is shocked. Oliver was frozen at one point. And now Oliver's in front of him. And I think in this moment of loopiness and weakness, and like he's drenched, he's feeling the blood like leave him and rushing. And so he's cold to the touch. So he touches his bare fingers against Oliver's chin. And he says very, very weakly, you saved me again.
Every time, Arian. Now get up, because this is not over. As a wave crashes over, cutscene back to Aelix on the beach. as this storm that is coming in, this hurricane, has cast a shadow over Roseville Beach, the one crack allowing Compulsion to enter into the village. You have perhaps the only thing that might be able to help, the grimoire that Mr. War gave to the group. But it's in ancient Greek, and you cannot decipher it.
She's still in the fucking sand. Like, she hasn't even turned to look at the crack. I think the thought is there, but not any comprehension of what's going on. It's like there is a deafening silence around her. And she looks over at Kao, who's standing right there, and, like, doesn't say anything. He's just staring, like, almost unfocused.
Your turn, then. Kao steps forward and looks at the flask, looks at Alix, steps past the place where the libations were poured first up, puts the flask away and holds out a hand. Today is not your day. We must bind. They are everywhere.
I can't read this fucking book.
I can! And Kao, before Alix, drops into the sand pouring into the fur, and the very large hands of a demigod reach out to grab this book and begins to just read any page that Alix might turn to, says it aloud, quickly, beautifully, like singing music, but they are just words.
It's very easy to find information in this book. There are primarily illustrations, as if somebody who had gone mad had written this grimoire, this tome, with poetic descriptions in a way that is perhaps a bit too poetic for the moment. And Compulsion, there's one thing that is repeated over and over again in these phrases and these prose, is it alludes to imagery. It alludes to the image of Compulsion, that it is something that is how Compulsion communicates, is with images. But before you can read any further, Kao, there is another lightning bolt that comes straight at you, and it crackles. We actually see in slow motion as it strikes at the heart of you, and then on the beach, swooping, you hear a motorcycle that comes and jumps in front of the lightning bolt, and oh shit, jumps right out, absorbing the lightning. Gabriella, on the motorcycle, driving it, spins in the beach around you and, like, picks up Alix and stops. It's like, you got yourselves in a mess here, but we're here to help. Don't you worry.
We?
What?
Lou, you watch as an army begins marching through this little crack, and there's another lightning strike. The hurricane is being held back by you, but Roseville Beach is not safe anymore.
I think it has turned from just, like, the knee in the sand, the sweating, to crying from this, like, just full-bodied muscle exhaustion that is happening. And eventually, throughout all of this, those tears, because blood vessels have popped in her eyes, have kind of started to run red. And she's now currently, like, on all fours with the exertion of keeping this magic up. And seeing that it has been broken, seeing that there has been people starting to walk through it to the point where it's not helping anymore, she lets it go. And I think there's just like a cry out, and she kind of falls face first into the sand. The underneath of her fingernails hurt because it's just so, she's never expounded this much energy before. And there's like a moment where she lays there and the wind is whipping from this hurricane through the sand, is blowing in her face. And she really did just give her all to Roseville Beach. but that wasn't enough. And not Roseville Beach, because that's not the problem, but this creature, this entity, this thing that has disrupted the nature of the world is asking for more from her. And she doesn't want to give it that, but if she doesn't give it that, then everyone else suffers. And so she gives herself like 10 seconds on the ground to just breathe and wet the sand with blood and then wipe it from her face, smearing it a little bit, almost like under cheek paint, and eventually pushes herself up, and she is haggard and she is unstable. Yet, as long as Roseville Beach is here, Lou is here.
You lift yourself off the sand to see Roseville Beach fighting back. You see Oliver having pulled Arian out of the ocean. You see Oshit and Gabriella having rowed onto the beach to protect Alix and Kao as they are reading through this grim war. Roseville Beach is fighting back.
In the eye of a hurricane, but like in the silence of a battle, there's a moment in which she looks down both ways and she sees the extent of Roseville Beach, and she sees that the billboards going both ways, the lights are still on, they're advertising these stupid ads that they have always advertised. She sees the one far in the distance where her and Annie meet all of the time and sit and just look, and she realizes that this place has a beating heart, and it is almost its own living entity. And it saved her, and it is saving her again in this moment. And the only thing she can do is fix it. She sees that Alix and Kao are being protected already, and I think she finally looks to the sea into the sky and kind of like takes in this big nature manifestation that is happening. And that seems like a lot. That seems like maybe too much, almost. But she sees Gabrielle and she sees, oh shit. Is Gabriella off her bike?
Gabriella's on her bike, and I think she's got like a baseball bat. She's joined the rebellious youths of Roseville Beach, and she is driving by. She's whipping these guys with bats, but you can totally steal the bike.
Gabriella! I need that more than you right now!
She has a visor on, right, for her helmet, as she revs up again. And it spins in the full circle as it stops, and it revs up, and it goes down the beach, and she offers her hand out to you, and in a swift motion, the two of you swap as she tucks and rolls off of the bike.
Lou is now on this bike. The sand is flying up from the tires from the beach as she takes off back towards the town, towards that tattoo parlor.
Alix and Kao, as Gabriella and Oshit are buying you time. And if you look up and see, they're doing fine, but they're not doing perfectly. It's not going to last forever.
Is there any spell that we have come across that puts the fucker in a jar?
We are going to have to roll for this. You can choose who does it. It will change the outcome a little bit. It's goal and clue.
I would say that the scarier part needs to go to Alix, because Kao's just reading, and Alix actually has to understand magic. Kao doesn't listen to other people, if that's not abundantly apparent. But here, working with Alix, he lets her guide them both.
6-5.
There is an incantation. It has been cast, as far as you can tell, maybe one time. The exact things you need for this ritual are not specified, but you can tell the container it has to be trapped inside of is some sort of imagery. You think back to the pot, how the image of the entity, of compulsion, was painted on the inside of the pot. And all of the text, all of the writing, suggests that you can't destroy compulsion, but you can hide it. You can use the grimoire to help guide this ritual.
Aelix is going to take out the blank brass coin, and she's going to put it on the sand in front of her and start just like craft the image into it as she casts it.
We're going to kind of zoom out slightly as we see the coven closing in on you and Gabriella and Oh Shit sort of closing in tighter. We're going to cut over to Arion, who has just been pulled out of the ocean by Oliver. And all around you, the water begins to swirl like a whirlpool as it's charging with electricity. Oliver grabs your hand. He throws a net into the water as he's pulling something up, and he catches the sword. He holds it in his hand, and he looks to you. I don't... Arion, I need help.
Well, what do you need?
Here, you take it. This is your world. You take it.
I am mortal now. There's a big wound with the jagged piece of metal is kind of like embedded into Arion's skin. And he just says, I don't have any of my siren powers. And he like looks at the crackling sword. Gods.
You can grab the sword. Absolutely.
He can touch it, but Arion's so weak. He's so bled out. Physically as well as like magically. The Stygian iron is just holding all of his potential within its metal. And the wound is raw and weeping blood with every movement that he makes. And I think as he like goes to reach for the sword, he tumbles forward like into Oliver and is just loopy and delirious. And he just says, I can't do it by myself with this use. Oliver, please.
He catches you as he grabs the sword. He takes a deep breath. And rising from the wave is Hallie. But not just Hallie. She wounded, magic seeping from her, from the gods, from Dionysus. She has attempted to heal it, but unable to. In that wound has crept compulsion. As she has become one with compulsion, he is beginning to take a mortal form. But it's not perfect, and it is killing Hallie. She's grown quite in size, as coming out of the water, waves buffet the boat. Even in this whirlpool, she reaches down and prepares to strike you with lightning. Arion, do you block it, or do you let Oliver?
We've spoken a few times about the reason why Arion is here, what he purports the reason is, which is to grant a boon to Odysseus, to Oliver, for saving his life the first time. The boon is true, but in my mind, it is not just the magic. It is that gamble, that exchange, that prize for protecting one other than yourself. And Arion in this moment fulfills his end of the bargain, the boon he's meant to grant to Oliver. And while being weak, all he hears is the crackle of lightning. And the last thing he thinks to himself before blocking the blow is, not him, not now. And just pushes Odysseus down, Oliver down, steps up, and doesn't do it elegantly or with great speed of a warrior. He just launches himself forward and gets hit square in the chest where the Stygian iron conducts the electricity.
You step in front of this lightning. It strikes you. It strikes the iron. It conducts inside of your body. Take the injury charred as the lightning severs the bone. You and Oliver drift from each other violently.
As the lightning pierces Arion, it is exactly that. It is like a lance of lightning has pierced directly through him. There is silence for a moment in the wake of the thunder reverberating in the skies around us. And then we hear the creak and then subsequent crack of the boat as it severs in half. And if Oliver were to lift his gaze up, he would, for a split heartbeat, see Arena standing until he isn't. But he staggers backward and then falls headfirst into the ocean. His entire skin is charred and broken from the charge of that lightning. We see bits and cuts bleeding out, this dark blood, almost too dark to be human. And we see like this weird in-between space as we see a mortal man, yet flares of scales poking out of the skin and then falling off of him, as if the body is going through rapid metamorphosis, dealing with this reckoning.
And the last glimpse you see of Oliver, he's reeling back in the net made from the Stygian iron as he prepares to confront Hallie. Lou, you are on your way, motorcycle, to the tattoo parlor. Rosal Beach is small. You are able to get there quickly. Do you, like, nicely park the motorcycle? Or do you
I'm, like, half off it before I even get there.
The motorcycle slides across the pavement, breaking up the road, and you are running in. The door slams open. Freshly placed runes from Alix cover the entire perimeter. And you know that the floorboards respond to your sledgehammer. You have the exact right tool for this job.
The shield having disappeared since she let the barrier down calls once again it to her hand, but this time she does call sledgehammer. And so that is the more prominent tool that she receives within the construction that we've made. What Lou wants to do, if this is magically possible, is to actively grab hold of the ley lines and control the energy they're sending to the beach. And so what I was envisioning is that Lou calls his sledgehammer, breaks the floorboards. Alix's runes like ignite and bring those into focus in order for me to take hold of them.
Magic, goal, injury, scares, trouble.
I'll give a 5 to magic, because that succeeds. I give a 6 to goal, because that succeeds. I give a 4 to the trouble die, injured and scared are failures. The sledgehammer comes down on the floorboards, breaks part of it. I think Alix's runes ignite at the feeling of the presence of that shield, because we all made it. And that is what shines a light onto the ley lines under these floorboards. And like they're piping, she grabs 2, one in each hand. And there's just like this, I think immediately to her, she becomes like almost paralyzed with just the energy that's flowing through her. Like her muscles go really tight. And she just is thinking about what is happening at the beach and how to get this power underneath there to spark up. And I guess if we're going this hard at it, where she's touching ley lines, to power Alix and Kao in their ruminations on this book.
This has never been done before. Not by the Coven, not by September, not by the spirits of Rosal Beach. This is permanently altering to Rosal Beach, Lou. Touching the ley line comes with serious consequences. You are going to take ley line infused again. You're going to take the scare change. Somehow, by a miracle. Or, more accurately, someone protected you from the full brunt of the ley line, and you do not go down. As you hear in your mind a little giggle, now that's how you do it. Go get him, hon. September Brown. Kao, you feel the presence of your divine energy amidst the waves. It is at the center of the hurricane, where the water is pooling and Hallie has risen and continues to grow in size. You have the opportunity to go grab it now, but you will have to leave Alix to do it.
Like the smell of ozone after lightning, Kao can smell it. They can taste it in the air. As the bolt of lightning strikes, Arian still goes down. All of that remains. But the difference is, as it happens, Kao from the beach yells, "Adelphos Ego!" and points. And from that, because he knows he can feel the iron that is stopping his brother from being who he truly is. And I would like to use something that's probably a bad idea. I would like to use power word polymorph, specifically on the iron. Even if it changes, his brother will live. And that is the intention.
It's been a long time coming. From your pocket to your PC, Pocket Bard is finally releasing a desktop app. This is everything you already know about Pocket Bard, now on desktop. GMs who run everything from their PC now have the immersive audio platform at their fingertips. If you've never heard of Pocket Bard before, it is a free audio software that helps game masters weave immersive sound into their game. It lets you control music on the fly, from exploration to combat. Make sure to try out their forever free Fantasy Essentials collection. You can download it directly from the Pocket Bard website, or for Windows users, find it on the Microsoft Store. Bigger screen, same Bard. Download the free app to use in your games this free RPG day. The only problem a TTRPG player has ever had is a backlog of character ideas. We polled a distinct number of individuals to find out that there has never been another problem. But in doing so,
we didn't do that.
We found your solution. You can make those ideas come to life with Hero Forge. Hero Forge offers fully customizable tabletop miniatures with dozens of fantasy species and thousands of parts to choose from, all within your browser. With a variety of materials, including bronze, color standees, and color plastic options, Hero Forge also offers downloadable model files for users to 3D print their unique designs at home. But that is not all. Hero Forge can also make you dice, using the same process as their color-printed minis and fully customizable. That OC you're excited to start playing? Get them their own personalized dice set. Make a Nat 20 feel like a gift from the gods. Visit Hero Forge to start designing your custom miniature and dice today, and check back often because they are constantly expanding their catalog of customization options. What you couldn't find today, you may just find tomorrow. This month on Kickstarter, The Wild Sea, Sourdown. The Wild Sea is an award-winning post-fall fantasy TTRPG set in a rampant ocean of verdant green. You play as a wild sailor, part of a motley crew. You'll journey across the Lingan tides, discovering charts, pursuing drives, and avoiding mires of the deep. Sourdown is a Wild Sea expansion that you can catch on Kickstarter now. The sea is ever flourishing, eternally triumphant, until you reach the white wood of Sourdown. All pale tides and quiet regrets, and you learn the wilds can die. In the home of the Chulkray, death plays different on the rustling waves, and through silk and honey, through spores and sacrifice, the lost reach of Sourdown might be dragged into summer once more. This is 50 plus pages of new content, including info on Sourdown, new factions, new backgrounds, and adjustable difficulty, and new ship options. If you want to better understand the Wild Sea, they did not ask me to say this, but my first dungeon has a great season of the game. Sail, but sail carefully.
The Badlands. Legend has it that beneath the dust, something old and powerful still whispers to any gunslinger foolish enough to listen. One day, aboard a doomed train into the wastes, three unlucky travelers hear that call. A runaway socialite, a shape-shifting bounty hunter, and a retired thief turned family man. Will our outcasts find what they're looking for?
I mean, we're already here. Let's have a little fun.
You really went in there, guns blazing.
I thought that was the plan.
My potions are miraculous.
I thought we were being quiet.
Oh, Stump only has one volume. Sorry.
Wild roses grow out of his mouth, having filled his lungs.
What's happening out there?
Violence.
Find out on Mage Hand High Five.
Magic. Goal. Scare.
Goal is going to be 4. A 6 on magic and a 3 on scare.
If you switch goal and magic, you'll succeed on both of them.
Then that one. Kao sees this and draws on the very magic that made him. Pulled from blood, sweat, and death in the sands of Troy. Kao thinks of all of the green that did not grow there and wishes for those fields to grow vines again and wishes to turn this Stygian iron into grapevines.
The iron does turn to vines, but the vines meld with Arion's skin. They form a weave that repairs the wound. Arion, you may remove chard. However, you are now touched by the entity. In a rush, return to your siren nature, but it's tainted. Every aspect of you that is beautiful and gorgeous darkens. It becomes eldritch.
Arion's, like, elegant scales and fins turn into almost tendril-like appendages around him. The beautiful flowing tail, like that of a betta fish, becomes more rough and coarse. It becomes, instead of flowing, it becomes static and stone-like. The body that is mostly human, lithe and elegant, has scales now moving all the way up, touching the vines that were carved and woven into his chest. And they turn into this wiry mess all around his body. And Arian's face, his eyes were this bright, slitted gold eye, but they've turned, there's a darkness behind the iris now that causes the iris to pulse and oscillate. Like there's something else living within the blood and skin of Arian. And everything that is human-like on his face is still human, but it's wrong now. There's weird scales where there shouldn't be, an additional fang where there wasn't one before. And Arian is forever changed.
You can see Oliver whipping around in a circle around Hallie. Hallie doesn't really pay him any mind. She is grown so large that he is but a nuisance to her. But he still has that net. And the net is, it's spiked. It can claw into her. He just doesn't have a chance. He doesn't have a chance to get it out.
Like, is it just that Hallie's too fast? Or is it that there's something wrong with the net?
The net itself is not injured. In fact, it's woven in such a way that the iron could never really be injured. The way that the blade broke in you was because the blade itself and the shaft were like two different pieces. And so the net won't break. It won't falter. She is just simply too big, and he is simply going too fast. As you're investigating this, though, you see a reflection off the net. It actually blinds you, and it catches you off guard because there should be no light in this storm. And you look above you to see a fiery phoenix flying in to aid you in distracting Hallie. Riding atop it, Granny.
Arian sees the phoenix flying overhead, and there's a smile, and he winces a little bit, feeling little black ink tendrils like clawing at the inside of his skin. It is a pain and a sensation he can't move by. It's like having ice shards in your very flesh. And he shakes it all off
and starts darting towards the boat. Hallie is incredibly large, and Arian can't do very much about it. What he can do is help Oliver's boat and the waves around it. So what I would like to do is emerge from the water by the boat.
Oliver, hang on. I can help.
Oh my god, Arian! Oh my god! And he pulls you back up, unfazed by your change.
Love it, we do not have enough time. Hold on to that net. May your aim be true. But hang on. This is going to be very fast. Very, very fast.
And what I'm going to do is I want to, because it's already a whirlpool moving, what I want to do is redirect using my own oceanic power and water to create a, almost like a jet stream of water that is only for Oliver. So I am propelling the boat around Hallie until Oliver has the right opportunity to toss this net in, and then I can bring her down from the ocean.
You, for the first time in actually several weeks, call on a non-violent aspect of your magic, Arian.
As Oliver pulls Arian up, in that conversation, Arian has his hand on Oliver's face, and then his fingers kind of twine behind the beautiful red ringlets around his hair. And he sees this man unfazed, and he could see the reflection of his own face in Oliver's eyes. And it is a visage that he finds hard to look at. But if Oliver is able to look at it, maybe it's not so bad. As he, like, touches Oliver and states his plan, he leans upward and presses a kiss right on his forehead. And we see a tiny glow of what would be siren magic. And he looks at Oliver one last time. He says,
"Strike true, beloved."
And he will flop backwards into the water, where we see his tail dive into the water. And we start hearing Arian sing from beneath the waves around the boat, humming and singing. And it is an old little, it's almost hymn-like. It is the song of the name he used to refer to Oliver as, Odysseus. And we just hear that angelic, slightly eldritch-like chanting from beneath the waves, just singing, "Odysseus, Odysseus." And it's just propelling the boat forward.
As Odysseus is propelled forward, moving faster, but able to get around Hallie's movements. He's waiting for the opportunity, and it's not coming. And then the Phoenix, the winged dog fuck, and Granny begin to distract her as she is now dealing with the clawing at her face, at her eyes, at her being. And it opens up the opportunity. He throws the net, and he actually grabs onto it as it latches into the shadowy scales that have replaced her normal scales. And he is thrown off the boat onto Hallie as he latches on the other hooks, and they compress inward as you see the shadows begin to dissipate like a ripple. And Hallie begins to shrink and shrink and shrink, and the storm begins to clear. The moon shines through the eye of the hurricane as there's a final rumble of thunder and soft rain falls on Roosevelt Beach. Alex, you are in a very intense ritual at the moment. So, here's how this is going to work. We are going to need to make a couple rolls. One to make the insignia, one to perform the ritual, and one to resist the entity. The one for the ritual must be magic. The ley line will grant you a bonus die on all of these rolls.
I have 3 sixes in there.
What image do you carve onto the coin? The grimoire did not say it had to be a specific image, just that compulsion communicates through imagery. That is how they are able to exist.
On one side of the coin, there will be an etching of her own face. On the other side of the coin will be an etching of Estelle's. They're separated,
and they can never touch. It's a constant, endless compulsion to be together.
The second role here is going to be to perform the ritual.
And I will use all 8 of my words for this. Bane, bind, call. I name compulsion for what it is, which is, at its core, fear of loss. I command it. I shapeshift the edges of the coin outward, so it's a little bit wider, almost like a jar, with still like the flat disc of it being the base, so the two faces don't meet. I'm pulling this using telekinesis. I grant a boon to it so that it will hold forever, and in it is every piece of Alix's heart in her love for her roommates, for this place, for the weird old money ghost that just makes a cold spot in their home, for Auntie and her finally girlfriend of however many years it's been, for the weird dog fuck, for oh shit, all of it. All right, 1-6 is going to magic. 1-6 is going to goal. I have a 6 going to scared and a 4 going to injured. So that is a full success across the board.
Get a sense of deja vu as the shadows of Roseville Beach begin to collect onto the shore, onto the sands, and they get dark, they get dense, as they finally surround Alix, and Alix alone. This final roll is to resist the entity. But before you make that roll, every one of you hear compulsion as it reaches out to you, and it offers you success. It offers you what your heart desires most. And all you have to do, all it needs, is for you to get that coin. Starting with Kayo, I would like all of you to tell me what it offered you.
To be loved. To be loved forever. Not feared. It is the promise of everywhere that they go forever, people will celebrate and revel and not cry. And Kayo doesn't even know how sad the deeper parts of their heart truly is, but can hear these words.
The entity offered Arian everything that he wanted. To be able to be of land and sea, to have a life with Oliver, to walk on the sandy beaches of Roseville without forsaking anything else. It offered him everything. Everything he ever wanted. No sacrifice. No pain. But Arian knows that that's a lie. I would rather be a siren forever and love from afar than doom this place to you.
I think the entity offered Lou almost like a fresh start, offered an erasing of her childhood, of her parents, of everything that happened to her, and also at the same time said that, like, offered her brother success, offered her a future with Annie. And what's so weird about that, though, is that it doesn't make sense. If Lou's childhood was perfect, she never would have come to Roseville Beach. Her brother wouldn't need help. She would have never met Annie. It doesn't mesh, and it doesn't make any sense to the life she's lived. It washes over her, and it feels so alien to anything she's ever wanted that she simply watches it go by.
It thinks it's clever. It saw everything on this beach. It understands the depths of what Alix went through. And so compulsion offers Alix a life with Estelle where she is whole
and they are at peace, and everything that Alix has spent years wanting back. And the thing is, all Alix really wants is just to kiss Estelle one more time and forget that the world is moving around her. Compulsion cannot offer anything that Alix wants. There is no way for it to do that. And I think Alix kind of laughs in this pitch black, and almost without stopping, you can see a cigarette start floating out of her pocket, just up into her mouth. The end of it bursts into flames. I told you that I was gonna take back everything you took. You should have left while you had the chance. And you see her eyes shift from purple streaked with gold to that pure gold glowing and shining. 3 sixes.
Compulsion recedes from Roseville Beach, trapped within your coin, successfully performing the ritual, Alix. Congratulations. That is a feat that no single witch has ever performed alone.
As the ocean quiets, the skies brighten like the sweetest smell of baked goods, the most delicious meal you've ever smelled. Kao could smell their divinity. Eupathatos, like a word echoing in the water, calls to him. And from the water, where the divinity began to bleed out, it flows ashore. They don't even go to it. And as it washes, Kao just walks into the waves ever so slightly, dipping their feet in. And with every lap of the waves, the water and the sand flowing over their feet, the fur getting wet, we see that divinity climb back up, scale by scale, not removing the blackness, just transforming it, making it deep and rich like oil slicks, up weaving through their scales and up his face, brightening something that was very old, changing it. The divinity makes it so that once again, as we see the scales transform, the back of the blonde mane fades to that oil slick black hair again of a short human man, unremarkable except for the many tattoos, lots of strange clothes, and everything about them, but mortal in their unremarkableness. They spin around and lay down flat on their back in the sand, letting the water roll over them, rejoicing.
And we're going to flash that montage forward to the Garden of Dionysus and you returning to Divine.
Well, it all starts with the water, right? Kao walks to where there was a beautiful fountain, now a tree. Without the vengeful power of a god that left this garden, but rather with someone who has remembered what it means to stand with others, doesn't command the tree to leave. Just asks it to step aside, and the water itself flows out, and with just a dip of their hand, the water is clean and pure again, blessed by Dionysus all over again. Now she can come back, and inside of their shared small garden house, Kao goes to Divine and sits at her feet, smiles up at her, admiring how beautiful she is in her wooden state, and remembering that everything does have to change
Sometimes it's about being somewhere new, and sometimes vacation ends and you do have to go home. And with a gentle hand on her leg, he offers her a drink from his flask. Divine revelry, as he imparts some of the same flask that he poured out for her to bring her back.
We get a flash of scenes where she, like water nourishing a tree, it travels up through her body and brings her back to life. We see her return to the forest, as this has been a wonderful life for her in Rosal Beach, but the village does not need her anymore. The village can protect itself. She politely asks the trees to join her, and almost like they grow in reverse, they return to the earth as she returns to the forest.
She starts out with rebuilding the damage she made. So fixing the hardwood floor of this tattoo parlor is number one on the list. And then I think literally just doing odd jobs for people throughout the next month or two is kind of like where she spends most of her time. There's been a lot of loss recently in her life that she hasn't expected, in the terms of people who have come and gone very quickly, such as KO and September and Atticus and all of them. And she doesn't quite know how to deal with that yet. And so she isn't really dealing with it. She's just more, we have physical things to do to rebuild Roseville, and that's what's the most important thing. Lou is like running from the tattoo parlor back to Dionysus's garden and seeing if everybody is non-statue anymore.
And it's as if they wake from a collective dream. The only ones who seem to remember what happened are Gabriella, Granny and Auntie. Everyone who helped defend Roseville Beach remembers. But the rest of the village, it's like a hazy, foggy memory. Something you're not sure if you can trust.
Lou runs up to where she was originally, between Annie and Samira, and is trying to help them both in terms of, like, they just out of paralysis, but really her only focus is on Annie. And there's been something she's wanted to say. This clearly is not the time for that. But I think that there's a moment in her trying to guide Annie back to her own apartment, in which she says, "Hey, I wrote something recently for someone, and I really need your thoughts on it. And I know that I have not been the most forward with you since we've known each other, but this letter means a lot to me. And so if you could just make sure that it doesn't sound weird, that would be super helpful." And Lou pulls a little folded up scrap of paper from her pocket and hands it over to Annie and is like, "And then tomorrow, after you've slept, the most important thing, not reading this letter, slept, I'll be back here. And I need to check to make sure you're okay. And then I think we should also talk about, well, the letter, but then also, like, not the letter. Okay?"
As you ramble on, we pan out and cut to Arion.
As we unfold beyond the chaotic conflict that just occurred, Arion knows that he cannot return immediately. He brings Oliver to shore, and when he receives the pendant that would allow him to step foot to land, doesn't quite work. The eldritch nature within his blood is preventing some sort of connection from taking place. And there's this moment of realization. He looks upon everyone on the beach and he says,
I need to see her. I think my mother. The spark, it's not done yet.
And I think Arian like sees everybody for like a moment. He dives deep underwater, and we do not know how far he goes or how far he swims. He does meet a woman sitting on an island all by herself, and he ducks his head above the water. Time moving away, the solstice marking the end of summer. Like a child in trouble, he pops his head from above the tide and stares at his mother and asks,
Mother, I don't think I'm done yet.
Sweet Arya, if you're not done, then you're not done. Your journey did not lead you here. Why have you returned?
I don't feel like I'm just the siren anymore. I also am not like man. I don't know. I feel like everything and nothing. I feel hideous. I don't know what I meant to do. I just know that there's something that blooms in me that didn't bloom before.
And she puts her hand on her chest. You may have a scar for your body, but that is not what you feel, Arion. What you are feeling truly is love and the fear that comes with it. And there is nothing that can be done about that.
It feels like I'm about to die.
It will. It'll never stop. And we're going to cut from Arion to Aelix. I would love a montage from you about what you do with the coin.
It's wider now. It was expanded as part of the spell, but she'll still just keep like flicking it over in her hands, looking at it. It's like she spends several days out against like the beach, just staring at the waves, sitting at the shoreline, having a smoke and a shitty beer. I think it's around the third day of just sort of staring into the horizon that she stops spinning it and finally accepts in some format that she's not gonna find a way to hear Estelle's voice again. That there's no way holding on to this anymore is gonna do her any good. And so she stares at it. She flips it between her face and over to Estelle's. And one last time, goodbye, love. And flicks it. And it spins much farther out than just a normal physical flick. It sails off into the horizon to drop into the water, to sink to the bottom.
And we follow the coin as it floats down, down, down to the depths of the ocean, where it rests in the sand before a tentacle grabs it and sweeps it away.
This series stars Alexander Christopher as the Game Master, Valiant Dorian as Arion, Dan Pixel as Aelix Cho, and Kenzie Tartaglioni as Lou Wells. This episode's guest star was Kai K as Kao. If you liked it, share, rate, and review. You can join our Discord, and make sure to check out our Patreon for this season's character advancements, bloopers, aftershows, and so much more.